The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days. I'm Marcus Boucher. Welcome back to another week of NFL coverage here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. 5 weeks of the NFL season are down in the books, and we had 14 games of high-octane action in the NFL this weekend as the Redskins, Falcons, Saints, and Broncos all had byes, but there was plenty of action to talk about, and we'll get into every game of Week 5 as well as preview every game from Week 6 of the upcoming NFL season. But first, being as this is the Bay's Golden Days, we got to show love to the Bay Area's team, and there ain't even too much love to show this weekend because the Raiders once again lost for the third straight time this season, ending their six game home winning streak. Let's just hop into it and see what happened.
So in comes EJ Manuel.
Next man up. That ain't gonna stop us.
We're gonna do what we always do, stepping up and rallying around whoever is playing at quarterback.
It's not today, man. Let's put it on film, man. Let's do what we do.
Both of us started out 2-0. Both of us are 2-2. We both need this game. We gotta have it at home.
RIP Tom Petty and RIP the Raiders' home winning streak. It ends at 6 after losing our third straight game to the Ravens, 30-17, just as I mentioned. And let's go ahead and hop straight into this game. No bullshit. First quarter, what I say on our preview podcast, death by deep ball. The only way the Ravens were going to be able to beat us was with the deep ball. And guess what Joe Flacco does on the very first play? Goes deep to Mike Wallace for a 52-yard bomb as he beats Sean Smith. Reggie Nelson was floating in the middle of nowhere, did not have the help over the top, came late, and it set up the Ravens perfectly in the Raiders' red zone early, and they capped off a 5-play, 75-yard touchdown drive with a 2-yard tight end reverse, it looked like, with Vincent Mayo. I have no idea who the guy was. If he was a tight end, it looked like that's where he lined up in the formation, but just off the back in the first 2 minutes of the game, the Ravens take a 7-0 lead, and it's looking like an avalanche is incoming to Oakland, because on the Raiders' first drive, they actually pick up a first down right away on the very first two plays. Michael Crabtree makes his first catch back from that bruised lung injury, and Marshawn Lynch gets a nice 8-yard run to pick up a first down, and he was actually looking pretty good on his first run. But then we get to the third play of the drive, and Jared Cook cannot hold on to the ball. EJ Manuel hits him on a nice little check down. He fumbles the ball, and it is recovered by Jimmy Smith for a Ravens 47-yard touchdown, and just like that, the avalanche is in full effect. The Raiders are down 14-0. 3 minutes into the game with their backup quarterback on the field. But like I mentioned, those first two plays looked pretty good for the Raiders. And when they got the ball back, they drove the ball downfield 61 yards on 12 plays with Marshawn Lynch and Jalen Richard splitting up that run game. They looked like they ran the ball great in that first drive, but the Raiders ultimately had to settle for a field goal, and they're down 14-3. The Ravens then respond with a 15-play, 75-yard touchdown drive, and everything seemed like it was going right for the Ravens because Joe Flacco literally ate shit, got up, and completed a third down conversion. I mean, I thought I was tripping last week when I saw Trevor Siemian throwing up ducks, just dropping in the Broncos' wide receiver's hands. Now I see Joe Flacco literally falling on his ass, scrambling like he's in one of those commercials. Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. Well, he got up and he still converted, and it leads to a Ravens touchdown. Buck Allen tops it off at the 1-yard line, and just like that, the Ravens are up 21-3, and the Raiders needed a touchdown badly going into that second quarter, and boy, did they get it, because EJ Manuel finally connects with Michael Crabtree on a beautiful 41-yard play-action bomb. This was great work by E.J. Manuel stepping up in the pocket. This is one of the things where I was criticizing Todd Downing. We haven't seen too much of the play-action offense this year. You'd think with Marshawn Lynch in the backfield, with a backup quarterback, they're going to be stacking the box. Play-action should have been our go-to play from the beginning. We should have took a shot down the field like the Ravens did because Joe Flacco came out and he did not want to give the ball back. But as I mentioned, Crabtree, we all know about his 3-touchdown performance last year. He returned huge from that bruised lung. He gets the first touchdown of the day for the Raiders. It was actually E.J. Manuel's first touchdown as a Raider and his first touchdown since 2015. And just like that, the Raiders are only down 21-10. Not as bad as it looked, but Joe Flacco responds with another deep ball, 54 yards to Mike Wallace, again over Sean Smith and Reggie Nelson. This gets the Ravens inside Oakland 10-yard line. The defense holds the Ravens to a field goal, and we go into the halftime down 24-10. Coming out of the halftime, the Raiders offense needed some points, but it did not show up as they had two consecutive 3-and-outs as the Raiders offensive line gives up back-to-back sacks. But on the flip side, the Raiders defense also came out hot on the second half, and they forced 2 3-and-outs also. And then the Raiders finally make some adjustment as E.J. Manuel was getting sacked left and right. They started to move E.J. around in the pocket. He hits Crabtree on a big third down conversion, hits Seth Roberts on a sideline conversion, and they go 12 play, 65 yards, and a touchdown drive capped off with beast mode at the goal line, and the Raiders are only down 24-17. I thought this was a great drive because we saw E.J. Manuel move around in the pocket. We saw him scramble on that third down in the red zone to get that first down, and they eventually give it to Marshawn. A little quick hurry-up option. You can give him the ball out of the backfield. It doesn't matter where he lines up. You're only 1 yard away. Beast mode is going to get in, and we're only down one possession. I'm thinking, holy shit, do we actually got a chance? Can the Raiders come back? Can somebody make a play and force Joe Flacco to turn the ball over to set up the Raiders for a chance to tie and maybe win this game? Nope, because the Raiders defense, after coming out hot in that second half with those back-to-back 3-and-outs, looked like they just completely fell apart because the Raiders could not get off the field as Joe Flacco was just picking them apart on third down. Macklin had a couple third downs. Breshad Perriman even had a third down. Mike Wallace, you talked about his deep balls. He even got a couple third down conversions, and they let the Ravens drive 72 yards for a field goal, and we're down 10 points, 27-17, a two-possession game going into the fourth quarter. And the Raiders' next drive, they move the ball down to the Baltimore 44-yard line, and this is where I think the biggest coaching mistake of the game from Jack Del Rio. It was a 4th and 3rd from the Baltimore Ravens 44-yard line, and we decided to punt. What? Black Jack Del Rio? Big balls Jack? You're going to punt the ball? Down 10 points, 2 possessions, only 8 minutes left in the game. We're already in Baltimore's territory. I know that we don't have Sebastian Janikowski. Giorgio Tavecchio already hit a 50-yard field goal, though. If this was Janikowski, anytime we're near midfield, I want a field goal. But so I can understand that coaching process. You don't want Tavecchio to miss, give the Ravens a short field. But 4th and 3, you're going to punt the ball? This is the same coach, Jack Del Rio, who just a week ago did a fake punt with Marquette King when it was, 4th and 18? So he had to run 27 yards to get a first down? In our own territory, and now we're in Baltimore's territory, backup quarterback, 4th and 3. 4th and 3, we punt the ball. I can't believe it. I mean, after the game, Jack Del Rio said he was expecting Marquette King to pin him inside the 5, and hopefully our defense could do something, but our defense really wasn't doing nothing all day with no sacks. Killer Mack couldn't even get to the quarterback, no pressures. I mean, this was truly just a terrible call. I mean, hindsight is 20/20, but this truly looked like a terrible call because Marquette King then boots the ball into the end zone. The Ravens get the ball at the 20, so the ball only moves from the 44 to the 20. It's a 24-yard punt. 24 yards. You might as well have just gone for it on 4th down. Obviously, that's a questionable play calling there from Jack Del Rio. And this is the man who went for 2 on the opening game of the season last year against the Saints. How many times have we seen him go for 2 last year? How many times have we already seen him go for it on 4th down? I get it with a backup quarterback. Michael Crabtree was hurt. He actually left the game late after diving and catching a ball. It looked like he landed on that bruised lung. But man, I just can't get over that play call. And the Raiders defense did exactly the opposite of what Jack Del Rio did. That was going to happen. He thought maybe he can get another 3-and-out, get him off the field. But the Ravens got the ball back, and the Raiders just can't get him off the field. The Ravens go 13 plays, 54 yards for another field goal while chewing up 6.5 minutes off the clock. 6.5 minutes, this Baltimore Ravens ran the ball down our throat in that fourth quarter, and that was truly the end of the game. The Ravens went up 30-17. go 3-and-out, 4-and-out if you want to say on the next drive. The game is over. The Ravens took care of the ball. They took care of the time of possession and literally just ran the ball down our throat. And honestly, it's tough because without Derek Carr playing, obviously with that back injury, you can't have expectations too high. But I still think this is a game that we could have won with our backup quarterback. So all these Raider fans, everybody's hitting the panic button. I'm not there yet. I'm not going to hit the panic button just yet, and I'll let you know if I get close to that panic button. But let's go ahead and look at the offense, defense, and really break down what happened. Obviously, like I said, it's tough without Derek Carr not playing with that back injury. There was actually stories that he was questionable all week leading up to this game. He was suiting up and throwing passes at practice. He actually threw a couple balls pregame, but the Raiders decided to save him next week against the Chargers, which I think is a smart move. You don't want to cause a serious injury and next thing you know, have Derek out for 4, 5, 6 weeks like the original report said. But if you listen to the Bay's Golden Days podcast, I told you Tony Romo had this injury, only missed a week. Cam Newton had this injury, only missed a week. So I told you Derek was going to be back, and it looks like he's still going to be back against the Chargers. But before we get into the Chargers, let's finish breaking down this game. EJ Manuel finished the day 13 for 26 with 159 yards and a touchdown. As I mentioned, his first touchdown as a Raider and his first touchdown since 2015. I honestly think he didn't look that bad. He didn't turn the ball over, which was huge, and he used his legs to make plays late in the game. Like I said, that offensive line is falling apart a little bit. Gabe Jackson was missing with a foot injury, and this offensive line lets up 3 sacks. I mean, we're already, what, on pace? I think they've let up 14 sacks this year. We only let up 18 sacks the whole entire season last year. This is not the top three offensive line that was blocking last year, and it needs to figure out something. But I think they did a great job run blocking because, really, we had over 100 yards rushing. Lynch had 12 carries, 43 yards and a touchdown. Jalen Richard had 9 carries for 37 yards. We looked good. The problem was we were down 14-0 in the first 3 minutes of kickoff. I mean, literally, we had no chance to try to run the ball, try to build our offense, try to get into a groove, because being down 14-0, it caused EJ Manuel to be dropping back and throwing all day. Like I mentioned, those sacks were huge. Crabtree had a good day, come back from that bruised lung with 6 catches, 82 yards, but he had to sit out late in the game, as I mentioned. And Amari Cooper, this is the man where we've all been waiting to talk about. Amari Cooper, 1 catch, 8 yards, and only had 2 targets. How the fuck does Amari Cooper only get targeted twice? How? Todd Downing, how? Please explain to me. I mean, I thought Bill Musgrave was bad last year and I was complaining, but Todd Downing in his first year as offensive coordinator has just completely flipped the script. We went from having one of our best offensive seasons last year with Bill Musgrave, and I still wanted to fire Bill Musgrave because I didn't like his play calling. But Todd Downing, at least Bill Musgrave understood when he had Connor Cook against the Texans in that playoff game, he tried to throw a screen pass to Mark Cooper. Yeah, a couple of them got tipped up and Jadeveon Clowney ended up with a pick, but he at least tried to feed him the ball. You got to get Amari Cooper the ball, and there were plays this game where Amari was open, but it looked like EJ Manuel was just stuck on Crabtree. His focus was laser locked on him, and Cooper could have had a couple chances for a big plays, but I just don't get it. He doesn't look the same. I mean, you can't tell by his demeanor or his body motion because he's always been a stoic guy. He's never really showed too much emotion, even when he was at Alabama. The only thing that's really starting to correlate to me is him not looking the same is maybe that knee injury in the preseason week 3 is taking a slow toll. He just doesn't want to talk about it because Amari Cooper should just be dominating, especially against his Ravens defensive backfield, which really isn't all that great. Amari Cooper has got to get the ball. It's as simple as that. Todd Downing, I've questioned your play calling. You were extremely predictable this weekend. He barely had any play action. When you did, we saw that we had a touchdown, but he's just been way too conservative, and he's honestly been outcoached these past 3 games leading all the way back to that Sunday Night Football game. I don't know if he tried to dumb down the offense too much for EJ Manuel, but it did not work as the Raiders only scored 17 points. But like I said, EJ Manuel honestly didn't even look that bad, so you can't put the blame on a backup quarterback. I think this is more putting a blame on the defense because, as we mentioned, the very first thing, the death by deep ball. I tried warning you guys on the podcast. I tried warning you. I knew it was coming. Mike Wallace, this guy's 30-something, whatever years old, can't run a route, but he can run straight, and he ran straight by Sean Smith and Reggie Nelson multiple times. This is a game where there was no David Amerson, no Gerrion Conley, and still no Obi Melifonwu. So we're still waiting for our first-round pick, who might be done for the season now with shin splints. It's kind of a shady story. No one really knows the truth about Gerion Conley and his shins. We're still waiting for our second-round pick, Obi. He might be back around midseason. Emerson should be back next week against the Chargers, so that should help improve it. But Sean Smith, we talked about it all year. We talked about it in the preseason. We talked about it in the preview podcast for the whole entire season. Sean Smith has looked terrible all year. He's been hitting the last couple of games, but this game, without David Emerson, he got fully exposed, and the Raiders honestly just couldn't get off the field. They lit up 7 out of 14 conversions on third down. And 50%, honestly, watching the game, it seemed like it was more than 50% conversion on third down, because every time the Ravens needed a first down, they got a first down. And then when they needed to run the ball, they ran the ball. As I mentioned, in that second half, they absolutely just chewed up the clock. And it is a little understandable, because in that second half, we had two middle linebackers go down, Corey James and that rookie Markell Lee. And you, if you've been listening to the podcast all year, I've said it. The Raiders' problem is middle linebacker. We were weak at middle linebacker before the season started, and now we're even weaker at middle linebacker with the additions of the injuries of Corey James and Markell Lee. Things are not looking great, and it honestly looked like the only man who was out there making tackles was Carl Joseph. They could have easily ripped off a couple more touchdown rounds if it wasn't for KJ coming up and releasing the boom. He was the only person making tackles for this Raiders defense with 9 tackles, besides Khalil Mack, who had 8 tackles, but Mack didn't have any quarterback pressures, no sacks on a day, and no one on this defensive line had a sack on a day. And no one was able to force Joe Flacco into a turnover. This is a guy who I told you had the longest streak in the NFL. Turned the ball over 10 games in a row. Threw 10 interceptions in a row. And the Raiders can't get a turnover. This is a Raiders team that hasn't got an interception all year long. One of the few of the three remaining teams that haven't had an INT. Oh, man. His defensive backfield's got to get something together. Ken Norton, defensive coordinator, you got to figure it out. You can't be letting up 30 points to the Ravens. Come on, man. I know one of those touchdowns came off of a defensive touchdown. So honestly, the Ravens only scored 2 offensive touchdowns. And guess how they got both of them? The deep ball. Death by deep ball. Sean Smith, we got to just lock him into a cover 2. Don't let him run deep, because everybody's going to run right by him. We got to have him locked in at least a cover 2 or a 2-man defense where there's a safety over top at all times. But we even saw when Reggie Nelson was trying to help him out over the top, he couldn't get there in time. Reggie Nelson's old. Reggie Nelson's slow. I want Obi Melifonwu back in there. I want our first round and our second round draft picks to come back and impact this defense, because if not, it's the same defense from last year that was letting up points left and right. And it was the same reason why I said this Raiders offense was going to have to score 30 points a game to win. And now here we are with our backup quarterback. We're not going to score more than 30 points. But next week, Derek Carr comes back. And as I mentioned, I'm not hitting the panic button yet, because these were 2 games, back-to-back games, the Broncos and the Ravens, where we almost came back and won with our backup quarterback. And we still almost pulled out the victory. So no, I'm staying off the panic button for now, especially with Derek Carr coming back next week, David Emerson coming back this week. I look for this team to improve while we play the Chargers. But I swear to God, if we lose to the San Diego Chargers, those Los Angeles pieces of shit, I will be on the panic button in a heartbeat. I'll be smashing that shit. I'll pull out a sledgehammer like I'm at a carnival and ba-ba-bing! I will smash the shit out of the panic button. But I don't think we're going to lose to the Chargers. You never know with that high power offense. But before we get into start breaking down week 6 of the Raiders-Chargers matchup, we got to go back and review all of week 5 of the NFL season and see where we made you some money in week 5 of NFL straight cash, homie. So let's go ahead and look at week 5 of the NFL season.
In 60 seconds, week 5. The first pick in his first game on his first snap gets his first sack and then comes back for an encore. Christian McCaffrey gets his first touchdown.
Second and goal, the shovel pass, McCaffrey, touchdown.
Big Ben goes to church on Sunday and asks Steelers fans to forgive his 5 picks.
Knocked away, intercepted, Barry Church for 6.
Eagles have a team building exercise in Arizona and Nelson Aguilar trust falls into the end zone. The Colts dust off their secret weapon.
And looking for Reggie Wayne in the end zone, and there he is.
A.J. Green blows past the Bills.
And he's gonna go!
And the Giants' season needs CPR. Clear? When Joe Flacco goes down, he gets back up.
Throws it to the near side, and it's complete!
All the balls bounce Sheldon Richardson's way in L.A., and Aaron Rodgers is still not that popular in Dallas.
How many times have we seen this from Aaron Rodgers?
And the Chiefs stay perfect.
Tyreek Hill, sooner or later, he'll pull this off.
Here's the pitch, and week 5 is going, gone.
Week 5 is gone, and Week 6 is right around the corner where the Raiders will face off against the Chargers. But as we start off this Week 5 review, why not start off with the Chargers as they pulled off the upset win and won you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days by beating the Giants 27-20. They covered the point spread, of course, by winning the game to improve the 1-4. The Chargers finally get their first win of the year, and Eli Manning and these Giants fall to 0-5. Yes, the same New York Giants that only lost 5 games last year start this year 0-5, and Eli Manning is now 0-4 all time against the Chargers, the team that he refused to play for. Talk about bittersweet irony for Phillip Rivers and those Chargers, as Phillip Rivers has a day throwing for 258 yards and 3 touchdowns, and Melvin Gordon gets back on track as he had 20 carries for 105 yards. But the storyline of this game was the Giants season looks like it's officially over, as Odell Beckham broke his ankle, as Brandon Marshall broke a foot, as Sterling Shepard broke something. All we know is the wide receiver corps for the Giants is broken, as they lost 4 wide receivers on the day. Who is Eli Manning going to throw the ball to? Oh, it doesn't matter, because teams historically have started 0-5, have never made the playoffs before, and it's going to be an uphill battle for the Giants if they have any chance, but I think their season is done. But let's go ahead and stick in the AFC West as we go from an 0-5 team to the only 5-0 team left in the league. That is the Kansas City Chiefs, and they took care of the Texans on Sunday Night Football 42-34, and this is a game that actually looks closer than it was, because Deshaun Watson put up some great garbage time stats as he threw for 261 yards, 5 touchdowns. It was DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller who had 5 catches combined for 4 touchdowns. You want to talk about efficiency, but this Chiefs offense got it done once again. If we're going to talk about efficiency, we got to talk about Alex Smith, who has now thrown 11 touchdown passes and no interceptions. I mean, I can't believe these words coming out of my mouth, but Alex Smith is putting up an MVP type season. He's first place in just about every passing stat so far this season, and he has been truly elite. I mean, I guess all you got to do is, if you want your average quarterback to step up to MVP level, is draft another rookie quarterback in the first round, because ever since Mahomes has come to Kansas City, Alex has been playing like someone pissed in his Cheerios, and he's got a fire lit underneath his ass. And then you add in Kareem Hunt, who had 29 carries for 107 yards. He becomes the first player since Adrian Peterson to start his career with 5 straight 100-yard games. What an accomplishment by the youngin out of Toledo, as he is fitting in perfectly into this Andy Reid offense, and Andy Reid is getting the most of his offense, as he also had 8 catches from Travis Kelce for 98 yards. And Tyreek Hill, talk about the special teams offense. Whenever this guy has the ball in his hands, he's electric, and he took an 82-yard punt return to the house that really put the dagger in the Texans. This was a Texans defense that was suffering injuries all day. J.J. Watt gets hurt again, and it truly is a huge blow to this Texans team that looked like they were turning things around, but they get shown up by the only undefeated team left in the NFL. The Kansas City Chiefs take care of the Texans 42-34 and cover that point spread here on the Bay's Golden Days. So 2-for-2 with the AFC West, getting you some money. Moving on now, we'll stick in the AFC South, as with the Texans losing, it opened the door for the Jacksonville Jaguars to sneak into first place in that division. The Jaguars got a huge win over the Steelers 30-9, and this was the biggest point spread of the week, favoring the Steelers at home. And I said, be wary of this point spread. I don't like it. The smarter bet might be the Jaguars and the points if you're not going to tease it down. And if you took the Jaguars and the points, we made you some money, as the Jacksonville Jaguars absolutely ran through the Pittsburgh Steelers. This was Leonard Fournette's game, as he had 28 carries for 181 yards and 2 touchdowns. That huge 90-yard touchdown dagger in the fourth quarter to put it on him. And his Jaguars defense took care of Ben Roethlisberger, and his Pittsburgh Steelers killer bees offense looked like they got fumigated, as they were just a bunch of dead bees, as Ben Roethlisberger throws for 312 yards but throws 5 interceptions. This man is now on a 6-interception streak since he's thrown his last touchdown. Ben Roethlisberger did not throw a pick six since 2013. He threw 2 in his first 4 passes in this game, and this was terrible for this offense because Antonio Brown tried to do everything he could with 10 catches for 157 yards, but Jalen Ramsey was coming up with the big plays, as he had an interception early, and he also swatted down an INT to Barry Church. You might say Antonio Brown with all those yards had a huge day, but Jalen Ramsey, the youngin, came out to play, and this Jacksonville Jaguars defense balled the fuck out as they had four touchdowns on his day. The Jags DBs finished with more receiving yards and more touchdowns than the Jacksonville Jaguars wide receivers did. Yes, you heard that correctly, as Blake Bortles only had to throw for 95 yards. He threw an interception, no TDs. He only threw for 95 yards. He didn't even throw a pass in the second half. Yes, this is the NFL we're talking about, and this man did not throw a pass in the second half as Leonard Fournette just continuously shoved the ball down the Steelers' throat. And as I mentioned, that 90-yard touchdown dagger, the Jaguars with this run game and with this defense absolutely took care of the Steelers and got a huge win, 30-9, to put them in first place in that AFC South. Moving on, we'll stick to the AFC South as the Titans battled the Dolphins, and this truly was an ugly game with no Marcus Mariota. Matt Castle only threw for 141 yards and a touchdown. Jay Cutler threw for 92 yards and a touchdown, but still got the win somehow. This game was truly pathetic. I don't even want to talk about it too much, but the Titans, they look like they're struggling without Marcus Mariota. We'll get more word from him, and hopefully he will be back next week. But the Dolphins come up with a big win to set them back to 500 as Smoking Jay continues to try to get something going down in Miami. He needs to just roll up a fat Cuban cigar and then maybe he'll throw for a couple 300 games, but we'll see. I don't got no faith in the Dolphins, but let's go ahead and keep it moving in that AFC South. That's the last team we're going to talk about, is the Indianapolis Colts against the Bay Area's own San Francisco 49ers. This game was played in Indianapolis, and it was a big day for Peyton Manning and the Colts as they retired Manning's jersey. They put up a big statue for him, but I also thought there was a lot of things that came into play in this game because there were more than one similarity between the Niners and the Colts. There was that rumor that Peyton Manning was going to come to the 49ers before he went to the Broncos. That would have been crazy to see if that would have happened. But shoulda, coulda, woulda, and the 49ers were now stuck with Brian Hoyer. He threw for 353 yards, though, for two touchdowns and almost had the 49ers winning this game as Matt Breida stepped up big for Carlos Hyde dealing with that injury. But on the flip side of the ball, it was Frank Gore. I talked about the connections between the Colts and the 49ers all day. Frank Gore passed Eric Dickerson for 7th all time on the rushing yards list, and after the game gave my probably my favorite quote of the year. He said, "Balky fucked this shit up." He didn't say word for word, but you know what I'm saying. He said Balky messed up the 49ers, and we all know what happened to Trent Balky. At least he can still be real about it and say what's going on. Frank Gore, I know he's an OG to a lot of Niner fans in the Bay Area, or at least the Niner fans that still remember Frank Gore, but he wasn't even the running back tearing up the 49ers all day as Marlon Mack, the rookie, puts up 91 yards on just 9 carries and a touchdown. And it was T.Y. Hilton saying thank you for the TDs and the yards, because he had 7 catches, 177 yards, as he torched this 49ers defensive backfield. And the Niners come close once again and lose by 3 points. That means they've lost a total of 4 games by 11 points. They've lost most of their games by only 3 points. And so are they the best 0-5 team ever? It doesn't really matter. They're 0-5, and as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, once you go 0-5, you pretty much have zero chance to make the playoffs. So the 49ers are pretty much following my model of success that I told them to do the same exact thing last year. Be competitive, but lose. Be competitive and lose, and that's exactly what the 49ers have done so far this year. Like I said, 4 games lost this year by a total of 11 points. We see the progress that they're making with that defensive line improving, with the couple of weapons that they got on offense, but they need a lot of help, and they fall to 0-5 on the year, and it's going to be tough to see if they can actually get a win. They might just turn into my Cleveland Browns team from last year, where I just say, hey, if they ain't got a win so far, they might just keep losing. We'll talk about the Jets and the Browns later, because that was just a terrible game. I don't even want to talk about it, but let's go ahead and stick with that NFC West as we move on to the Seahawks and the Rams in a division battle. And this was a game that the Rams were actually favored at home, and I said put your money on the Seahawks, and they won you some money by not only covering the point spread but getting the upset 16-10. Russell Wilson threw for 198 yards, a touchdown, and an interception, but it was Jared Goff who had a chance late in the game, throwing for 288 yards. He had 2 big interceptions, but they had a chance with Cooper Kupp late. He drops the ball, and they ended up losing the game 16-10, and which was a pretty impressive showcase by Jared Goff. Even Earl Thomas and a couple other members from the Legion of Boom said that Jared Goff has improved. I said I wasn't going to hop on a Jared Goff bandwagon unless he beat the Seahawks, so I'm still not all the way on it yet, but this was definitely an improved performance based on what he did last year against the Seahawks, but I still have yet to see him beat an elite defense. So Jared Goff and the Rams fall to 3-2 as the Seahawks catch up and also improve to 3-2. And just like that, we got a tie for first place in the NFC West as the Cardinals, the last team in the NFC West we're going to talk about, fall to 2-3 on the year as they got absolutely embarrassed by the Eagles. This was the game that I told you, take the Eagles and that 6-point spread. I won you some money once again as the Eagles took care of business 34-7. And Carson Wentz, I got to get off this Carson Wentz hype train before people start thinking I'm an Eagles fan, because this kid has looked phenomenal all year, just as I predicted that he'd have a better year than Dak Prescott, and I caught a lot of flack from Cowboys fans for that. But Carson Wentz ended the day with 304 yards, 4 touchdowns. This man was 8-for-9 for 207 yards and 3 touchdowns on third down alone. I'm over here complaining that the Raiders can't even get a third down conversion, and Carson Wentz is over here just balling out on third down. The guy has looked phenomenal this year. Nelson Aguilar had 4 catches for 93 yards and a touchdown. I think he leads the NFL now in touchdowns over 50 yards, which is hilarious because Nelson Aguilar couldn't even catch a ball a couple years ago. It looked like he joined the Monstars and stole Amari Cooper's powers and took him with him, because Nelson Aguilar can suddenly catch and Amari Cooper can't. Who knows what the hell is happening, but the Eagles fans are not going to complain because Nelson Aguilar is actually catching balls this year. Another man who's been catching balls his whole entire career is Larry Fitzgerald, as he caught another pass to make it 200 straight games with a catch. You want to talk about Mr. Consistent, and he also passed Marvin Harrison for having the most receiving yards ever on one team alone. Mr. Consistent, Mr. Loyalty, Mr. Larry Fitzgerald, let me just give some respect to you, because, hey, you're getting up there in age, and it's getting towards the end of the line for you and Carson Palmer. As I talked about, they lost David Johnson, but breaking news here on the Bay's Golden Days, Adrian Peterson has been traded to the Arizona Cardinals. AP, hey, that's a trade that I threw out a couple weeks ago on this very podcast. I said, David Johnson, you're hurt. You might as well go trade for Adrian Peterson. Hey, am I in the front office for the Cardinals? Am I GM? Because I told you to make this trade, and the Cardinals make this trade. We'll see how quickly AP can help turn things around for the Cardinals. We'll talk about the matchup next week in the Straight Cash Homie Breakdown for Week 6. But let's go ahead and keep it moving now as we wrap up the NFC West and move on to the NFC East, with the Eagles taking command of that first place spot, improving to 4-1. It was the Dallas Cowboys who once again suffered a defeat to the Green Bay Packers, and this was a game which I told you once again, take the Packers with the upset. And if you listen, we continue to win you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days. The Packers got the job done 35-31 as Aaron Rodgers throws for 221 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he comes back huge late in the game because it looked like the Cowboys once again had a chance to win this game. But we'll be watching a playoff game from last year, because once again they left too much time on the clock for Aaron Rodgers. You can't give this guy a minute left in the fourth quarter with the ball with a chance to score. Aaron Rodgers now has 18th fourth quarter touchdown passes alone since last year. That's the most in the NFL. You can't give him the ball. Green Bay alone scored 20 points in the fourth quarter. They only had the ball for 2 minutes and 16 seconds. Aaron Rodgers is deadly in the fourth quarter, and he struck quick and chopped off the Cowboys' heads as the Cowboys fall to 2-3. They tried to get the run game going with Ezekiel Elliott. He had 29 carries for 116 yards. Dak Prescott threw for 251 yards, 3 touchdowns, but that interception proved costly as the Packers really did win the game by the time of possession as they got the ball last, and this is just truly what the Packers do. If they get the ball last, it seems like they're going to win, because Aaron Rodgers is just too damn good of a quarterback, and the Cowboys saw that. Without Sean Lee on that defense, they got picked apart, and they could not stop him, and they could not get off the field, and at the end of the day, they ended up losing to the Packers 35-31. Let's go ahead and keep it moving now in the NFC North as the Packers took care of the Cowboys to move into first place in the NFC North. We had a division matchup on Monday Night Football, the Vikings and the Bears. The Vikings took care of the Bears 20-17, but this was a 3.5-point spread, and I told you take the Bears for the upset. Mitchell Trubisky did not get his first win of the season, but hey, he covered the point spread, so once again we won you some money in Mitchell Trubisky's first start. Did not have the greatest game, but did have his first touchdown pass and had one of the sickest 2-point conversions I've ever seen. This was an option, I don't even know what the hell it was, but this was one hell of a beautiful 2-point conversion. If you haven't seen it, go look it up, because that was phenomenal. I've never seen a play like it, but they still came up 3 points short as Sam Bradford was in and out of the game, and Case Keenum had to come and save the day, and it was Harrison Smith who put the dagger in to ruin Mitchell Trubisky's debut, because Mitchell Trubisky had a chance in the fourth quarter to try to drive down the field. He throws an INT to Harrison Smith, and he sets up the Vikings for a game-winning field goal, and the Vikings get a huge win 20-17 in an NFC North division matchup, and they gain ground on those Packers and actually tie up with the Lions for second place in that NFC North, as the Lions lost a huge game to the Panthers, as once again I picked the Panthers for the upset and won you some money once again here on the Bay's Golden Days, because the Panthers took care of the Lions 27-24. The Lions made it close by putting up 14 points in that fourth quarter. We all know what Matthew Stafford does in a fourth quarter, but he just simply ran out of time as he finished the day with 229 yards and two touchdowns. But it was Cam Newton on the flip side who threw for 355 yards and three touchdowns. It was the first time he had back-to-back 300-yard games in his career. He hit Ed Dixon five times for 175 yards. McCaffrey had a touchdown. Kelvin Benjamin had a touchdown. Devin Funchess had a touchdown. And this offense looked like the best it has ever looked. We talked about Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey splitting carries in the backfield, the things that Christian McCaffrey has able to bring to this passing offense, this whole different read option, screen pass, dink and dump, this shovel pass that he gave to McCaffrey where he had an option to Stewart on the outside. He flips it into McCaffrey. I thought it was a beautiful play, and the Panthers looked phenomenal. Luke Kuechly once again was all over the field tearing things up, and they got a huge win to improve to 4-1, first place in the NFC South. And this is why I said the Panthers could be a potential playoff team, and they are playing so far like it, as they're starting to separate themselves from the pack with both the Falcons and the Saints having bye weeks this week. Let's go ahead and look what the Buccaneers did on Thursday Night Football against the Patriots. They ended up losing 19-14, but it was a 5-point spread. I told you to take the Patriots, so this was a push. The true difference of this game, if you're watching, the Patriots were 4-for-4 on field goals. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were 0-for-3 on field goals. Simple as that. Jameis Winston threw for 334 yards and a touchdown, while Tom Brady had 303 yards and a touchdown. But this was truly a game between the field goal kickers, and Patriots executed and the Buccaneers didn't. It was as simple as that. DeSean Jackson had a big game with 5 catches, 106 yards, and Doug Martin came back from his suspension with 13 carries for 74 yards. But it was Brandon Cooks who had a big day. It was Deion Lewis. It was Tom Brady, and it was Stephon Gostkowski. The Patriots end up winning by field goals against a Tampa Bay team that really has looked pretty good this year, but they fall to 2-2, and the Patriots are 3-2 in that terrible AFC East. Let's go ahead and look at the AFC East now, as we had the Jets and the Browns facing off in what truly was the worst game of the week. And you might think I'm just being sarcastic, but no, literally, it was terrible. The first 10 possessions of this game resulted in 5 punts, 1 fumble, 2 interceptions, and 2 missed field goals. Terrible. Just absolutely terrible. And I feel sorry, because I know there still are some Jets fans out there, the Cleveland Dog Pound fans. This is probably a torture game to watch, but Jets fans actually got to be feeling pretty good, because they improved to 3-2 on the year now. The Jets have a better record than the Raiders. What world are we living in? We just absolutely dismantled the Jets. I guaranteed a victory over the Jets because I thought they were that bad. I thought they would be tanking their way to a top 5 draft pick, but no, now they're above 500 and have a 3-2 record. Josh McCown threw for 194 yards and 2 touchdowns. It only took him a couple years to get a win in MetLife Stadium, but he finally got it done. And God, what a truly terrible game. I want to apologize to anybody who watched it. I mean, you're better off watching paint dry. I mean, this was truly an awful game, so I don't want to even want to talk about it anymore. Let's go ahead and keep it moving now, as we'll talk about the Bills and the Bengals, as we'll stick in that AFC East, as the Bills were trying to make some moves to separate themselves from the Patriots, but they lost a huge game to the Bengals, 20-16. This is a game that it took the Bills, so I was wrong on that one. But Andy Dalton has a huge game, 328 yards, a touchdown, did have 2 picks, but it didn't really matter, because all he had to do was throw up the ball to AJ Green, and they were getting money, because AJ Green had 7 catches, 189 yards, and a touchdown, as he absolutely torched this Buffalo Bills defense. This is with defense that was top in the league in points scored, yards allowed, blah, 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 all that good stuff. Well, this is the Bengals offense that I told you they should be explosive this year. Ever since they fired their offensive coordinator in week 2 or 3, they've turned it around now and won 2 straight, and the Bengals are trying to keep it alive in that AFC North division. This was an interesting matchup, but at the end of the day, the Bengals got the job done 20-16, and that is every single game from week 5 of the NFL season, 14 games in the books, and I think we won your money on, what was that, 9-10 of those games? I mean, damn, that's a pretty good percentage here on the Bay's Golden Days. And if we're going to talk about what our winning percentage is, let's talk about winning some money. You know what time it is.
Straight cash, homie.
That's right. It's time for straight cash, homie. Week 6 of the NFL season here on the Bay's Golden Days. And being that is the Bay's Golden Days, of course, we're going to start off previewing the Raiders versus the Chargers first. And man, oh man, this should be one hell of a matchup, because we know the Chargers can put up points. Now we got to see if the Raiders can put up points, because hopefully we will get the return of Derek Carr. And Derek Carr being underneath that center. I told you the Raiders are capable of scoring 30 points per game, but Phillip Rivers on the other side with all the weapons that he has, the Chargers are just as able to put up 30 points themselves. So this should be a high-scoring shootout of a game, but I think the Raiders overall will take this for the W. They are favored by 1 point at home, and I just want to see the return of AC/DC. Can we get a greatest hits album? Can we get anything? Just give me a single, something. I want to see Amari Cooper and Derek Carr getting back involved with each other, because we've all seen what Amari Cooper's been able to do against the Chargers in his first couple years as a Raider. I want to see the very first play, get the man on a one-step wide receiver slant, get the ball in his hands. I think AC/DC needs to have a huge day. Michael Crabtree dealing with that bruised lung, he's Mr. Consistent. I think he's going to have a big day. This Raiders offense is going to be able to have to run the ball down the throat of the Chargers. They have a great defensive line for rushing the passer. You want to talk about Joey Bosa, who won Defensive Rookie of the Year last year, and then Melvin Ingram, who is finally coming around. He's getting sacks left and right, playing on the outside. This was a former first-round pick for the Chargers. I want to see how they match up against our offensive line. This is offensive line that's known for their car insurance of keeping Derek Carr up and healthy, but like I've said, they've already let up 14 sacks this year. They only let up 18 all of last year. The Raiders need to do a great job trying to protect Derek Carr, and on the flip side for the Raiders defense, we got to try to contain Keenan Allen and the return of Michael Williams, as Mike Williams is making his NFL debut for the Chargers. We all know Mike Williams from Clemson, that top 10 draft pick. He is a wide receiver that is looking to make an impact for the Chargers in his first game, and of course he's playing a against the Raiders, so it's going to be interesting how our DBs match up against his high power offense. I'm hoping that David Amerson is back. If not, then it's going to be up to Sean Smith again to try to slow down one of these big wide receivers for these Chargers defense. The Chargers have been putting up points left and right all season long, but I think the key is to slow down Melvin Gordon, and the Raiders got to put up points early to try to get the Chargers out of the running game, because if they get a lead and can just run the ball with Melvin Gordon, we saw what happened when the Ravens were running the ball on us last week. Melvin Gordon should be able to run down our throats easily. If Corey James and Markell Lee are not playing, we got a pair of 215-pound linebackers trying to stop the run, and it's not going to work. We need to slow down Melvin Gordon. Khalil Mack's got to get to the quarterback. It's going to be a huge game up the middle for Eddie Vanderdoes, the rookie out of UCLA. He's going to have to try to step up and try to slow down that run game. I think the Chargers and the Raiders should be one high-scoring game, but at the end of the day, you know I'm taking the Raiders minus 1 point at home, and I told you, if they lose this game, I'm full throttle on the panic button. There should be no way in hell that we lose to the Chargers. I know this is a team with a ton of talent, but this is a goddamn San Diego, Los Angeles super chokers. They're chokers. So even if we don't play our best game, I'm looking for Phillip Rivers to somehow hand us this game. But Raiders really just got to take care of the time of possession. I think if we hold the ball, if we don't let Melvin Gordon get started, if we control the time of possession battle and we control the turnover ratio, I'm taking the Raiders every day of the week over the Chargers at home in Oakland. Town business better be in the motherfucking building, because we need this win streak to get back on track for the Raiders and have that home field advantage. And we need to make up some motherfucking ground in this AFC West, as the Chiefs and the Broncos look like they never want to lose. But let's go ahead and talk about the Chiefs and the Broncos, as they got a couple tough matchups coming up this week. The Steelers go into Kansas City to try to be the first blemish mark on that undefeated record for the Chiefs. The Chiefs are favored by 4 points at home. This is a game last year where the Pittsburgh Steelers went in and absolutely tore up the Chiefs, and it should be an interesting matchup. Kareem Hunt should have his way. We just saw what Leonard Fournette did last week against the Steelers rush defense. Ryan Shazier in this front seven is going to have to step up huge to try to stop Kareem Hunt. But Alex Smith playing like an MVP, will it come to an end? We'll see. I really want to take the Steelers in this matchup. Partially, that's just because I hate the Chiefs so much. But a four-point spread, I see the Chiefs winning this game by a field goal. So I'll take the Steelers plus the points. Moving on to the Giants and the Broncos. This is going to be an interesting matchup because Eli Manning just really has nobody to pass the ball to. Absolutely nobody. I said four wide receivers all went down on one day. They're absolutely depleted. Now they're going against the no-fly zone. It'll be interesting to see if Eli Manning even throws for over 100 yards. This is interesting because Denver is favored by 12 points. Why do you got to make things so difficult, Vegas, huh? 12 points, this should be an easy pick for the Broncos, but with that offense, I don't have faith with them to really beat 12 points in anybody, so this is a spread that I'll probably just stay away from, to be completely honest, but the Broncos should definitely win this game. Let's hop into the primetime games now as we look at Thursday Night Football. This should be one hell of a barn burner on Thursday night. The Eagles going to Carolina to take on the Panthers. The Panthers are 3.5-point favorites. I've talked about Cam Newton having back-to-back 300-yard games for the first time in his career. He has looked phenomenal these past couple of weeks, but so has Carson Wentz. This is going to be a shootout. I look for the over in this game, but I like the momentum of the Panthers just too damn much. I think their defense is better. I think Luke Kuechly comes up with a couple of huge plays, and I'll take the Panthers -3.5 over the Eagles on Thursday night. Keep it moving to Sunday morning now, where we got the Dolphins and the Falcons, one of the biggest point spreads of the week. The Falcons are favored at home by 11 points over the Dolphins. Smoking Jay Cutler, I don't think he's going to be able to keep up with Matty Ice or Julio Jones the whole entire game, so I look for the Falcons to blow out the Dolphins. So yes, I will take the Falcons -11 points. The Bears and the Ravens face off in Baltimore. Baltimore is favored by 6.5 points. I saw what the Ravens did last week. I'm still not super impressed. This defense wasn't even all that great. Didn't force a turnover versus EJ Manuel, but they still got the job done. Still getting credit where credit due. And this is the Chicago Bears we're talking about. We saw what Trubisky did Monday night. It was nothing spectacular. Now he has a tougher face-off against his Ravens defense. I will take the Ravens to win by a touchdown. The Browns and the Texans face off in Houston, where we see the Texans are favored by 9.5 points. The way Deshaun Watson has been playing, you'd be stupid to pick against the Texans right now, especially when they're playing the 0-5 Browns. 9.5 points is a lot, but I look for the Texans to get the job done, as Deshaun Watson just keeps on putting up 5 after 5 after 5 touchdowns every single game. It seems like we got a matchup in the NFC North between the Packers and the Vikings in a division face-off in Minnesota. The Packers are favored by 3.5 points. I look for the Vikings to shut down with Case Keenum still at quarterback. We saw Sam Bradford on Monday night. He could only play one half before they had to shut him back down. This offense is going to struggle without Dalvin Cook. I will take the Packers to win this NFC North division matchup by 3.5 points. Moving on to the Lions and the Saints. This is an interesting one because it's happening in New Orleans, and the Saints are favored by 4.5 points coming off their bye week, which is, I think, is huge. But at the end of the day, I think the Lions are a better team than the Saints. So I think Matthew Stafford leads a fourth quarter comeback against Drew Brees and the Saints, and the Lions will win the game. I will take the Lions for the upset +4.5 points. The Patriots and the Jets face off in an AFC East division matchup. The Patriots are favored by 9.5. They finally pushed on the spread last week. They still didn't even cover. I've mentioned all year the Patriots have been failing to cover left and right. This is going to be an interesting one because the Jets really have turned it around since getting their asses whipped by the Raiders, and they're now 3-2. They're sitting there with the same record as the Patriots in a division matchup for first place in the AFC East. Can't believe I'm saying those words, and I can't believe I might be taking the Jets and the points, because the way that the Patriots have played all year, they haven't been covering the spread. So I think that might be a smarter bet, but I will look for the Patriots to win this game in New York. Moving on now to the 49ers and the Redskins. This is also an interesting one as we have some high point spreads this week. The Redskins are favored by 9.5 points at home over the 49ers. But like I mentioned earlier, the 49ers have lost a combined 4 games by a total of 11 points. They've been within a field goal pretty much every loss they've had this year. It might be a smart bet to take the 49ers in the points, but this Redskins offense really has looked great. They're coming off of a bye, which means they've had 2 weeks to prepare for the 49ers, but who really does need 2 weeks? It's going to be interesting because Kyle Shanahan playing against his old team. I think he might have a little bit of chip on his shoulder, and they want to put on a good showcase to try to recruit Kirk Cousins for next year. I think the Niners keep it close, but I will take the Redskins to win. But hey, the Niners and the points might be the smart bet there. Moving on to the Bucks and the Cardinals in Arizona. Tampa Bay is road favorites by 2.5 points. The Cardinals have been struggling, and as I mentioned, they just added back Adrian Peterson. It's going to be interesting to see how fast he can get accumulated to this offense, how big of an impact he's going to have. But I still do like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It'll be interesting to see. They should be getting back Quan Alexander this week. Lavonte David still dealing with injuries, missing their two middle linebackers. This defense has struggled, but I think getting Quan back, I look for the Buccaneers to win on the road against the Cardinals. The Rams Rams and the Jaguars face off in Jacksonville, and the Jaguars are actually favored by 2.5 points. This was a game where I thought the Rams might be favored, but these are two teams that are both 3-2, and I actually do like Jacksonville, the way that they run the ball. We saw Seattle win the game last week against the Rams, only 16 points. I think the Jaguars can run the ball with Fournette, not ask Blake Bortles to do too much, and the way that this defense has been playing, I think Jared Goff is going to have another test on back-to-back weeks, facing Legion of Boom last week, and now facing Jalen Ramsey and AJ Boye, some of the best corners in the league. This Jaguars defense has been playing phenomenal, so I will take Jacksonville at home, -2.5 points, and then we'll get to Monday Night Football. Colts, Titans, this is an even pick'em game. This is going to be a pick'em of which quarterback is playing, because as I mentioned, Andrew Luck did practice last week. It'll be interesting to see if he participates, and Marcus Mariota coming off that hamstring injury. I'll tell you this, pick whoever quarterback is playing. If Andrew Luck is playing, the Colts will win their first game of the year. If Marcus Mariota is playing, the Titans are going to win. If not, it truly is a toss-up. No one wants to see Jacoby Brissett versus Matt Castle on Monday Night Football, but unfortunately, that is probably what we're going to get, and this should be a snoozer of a game. Hopefully, there's still some playoff games going on for baseball. I mean, just this Monday night game, it was 3-2 at halftime. The Yankees and the Indian game was 7-3. I didn't know which channel I was watching, which game was baseball, which game was football, but it doesn't matter because that is every game from week 6 of the NFL season here on Straight Cash, homie of the Bay's Golden Days. And let's go ahead and recap every single pick against the spread. Just real quick, rapid fire. Thursday night football, I'm taking the Panthers -3.5 over the Eagles. I'm taking the Raiders over the Chargers -1. Falcons over the Dolphins -11. The Ravens over the Bears -6.5. The Texans over the Browns -9.5. The Packers over the Vikings -3.5. The Lions for the upset +4.5 over the Saints. I'll take the Patriots to win, but I don't like that spread of -9.5. The 49ers and the Redskins, I think the Redskins win, but I'll take the 49ers and the points to cover +9.5 points. The Buccaneers and the Cardinals, I'll take the Buccaneers -2.5. The Rams and the Jaguars, I'll take the Jaguars -2.5. The Steelers and the Chiefs, I'll take the Steelers +4. The Giants and the Broncos, I'll take the Broncos, but I don't like that point spread. And the Monday Night Football game, Colts Titans, like I said, pick whatever quarterback is playing. Marcus Mariota should be back. Marcus Mariota should get the win for the Titans, and we should win you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days. As I mentioned, we won 9-10 games this past week. There's only 14 games to choose from, so if you've been rocking with the Bay's Golden Days so far, we have been winning you some money, and not just any type of money, straight cash, homie, and that's what it is. That's what it's going to be here on the Bay's Golden Days. Thank you for listening, downloading, subscribing on iTunes and Google Play. Keep on a lookout. We're trying to get a YouTube channel up soon enough. The Bay's Golden Days will be here every single week to break down this Raiders-Chargers game, to break down Raiders Week 7, Raiders Week 8, Raiders Week 9, because to be honest with you, I could give a shit about this 3-game losing streak. I was on Sonoma State Radio. Shout out KSunRadio.com up at Sonoma State. My first year covering the Raiders, we went 0-10. I had to show up every single week and talk about a loss for 10 straight weeks. Hey, it's been 3 weeks in a row now, but hey, I've gotten used to it being a Raiders fan my whole life. And as I said, I'm not hitting that panic button. I'm not hopping off the bandwagon. If you are, this is the perfect time to hop the fuck off the bandwagon. Go back to the Niners. They're 0-5, but hey, that's not a bandwagon you want to jump on either. Either way, I'm still calling it. The Raiders will still be in the playoffs. We're still coming for that AFC West title shot, and it is still the Bay's Golden Days. You know what it is.
Hold it.
Steady gold, pony boy.